Hello and welcome to episode 146 of What Most People Think, the topical comedy podcast that is more than happy to admit that it enjoyed the shit out of the Jubilee. Had a right old knees up, you know, in favour, in honour of Her Madge, Mom, the Queen. And with me is, I'm sure, a fellow staunch monarchist, is Leo Kearse. Welcome back to the show, Leo.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate, I'm good. Did you have any street parties round your way?
There was a little one in our street. I didn't make it down to it. But I didn't spend my time on Twitter like so many left-wing people just moaning. I saw somebody tweeting, got like 50,000 likes. They tweeted, this weekend I'll be thinking about the people who died at Grenfell, the Windrush people, you know, all the bad stuff that Britain's ever done. They're just listing all this stuff. And it's like, man, well, I'm glad you know how to have a good time. That is, you could just kick back and have a can of Foster's.
That's one thing that I've always thought about the monarchy. Is the reason I've never been jealous of their wealth, because that's what people say, why does his family get all this money and acclaim? But I would just not swap places. I've never thought that she doesn't look like she's enjoying it, does she? Apart from when she goes to the horses, she gets a little cheeky smile on her face. And then when they fly the bombers overhead, and I think that is one sign. That's one good thing about winning a war, is that when you have a jubilee, you can fly an actual bomber that bombed the shit out of another country over, and no one thinks it's sinister.
I think being royalty is sort of wasted on the Queen, because like you say, she never really looked like she was enjoying it that much. You know, she was very much all into sort of duty, a sense of duty and responsibility. I think Prince Andrew showed, like, he should be the next king. He's somebody who really picked up the ball and ran with it all the way to Jeffrey Epstein's island. And, you know, people have a go at him for that, but come on, if you're given all the trappings of, like, you know, he's literally a prince.
Well, he's gone for sort of like 12th century monarch privileges, hasn't he? Like the kind of stuff you could do in 1204 and no one would have given a shit.
Like Sheriff of Nottingham, played by Alan Rickman. That was the sort of, you know, prince he was going for.
So just going back to the planes, Leo, I mean, what will future sort of flybys look like?
Well, I reckon when, and I'm saying when, not if, the West wins the war in Ukraine, because it isn't Ukraine versus Russia. It's the entire West against Russia. We're giving all the sort of hand-me-downs, all our old tanks and stuff to Ukraine. So we get a part of that victory march.
Your brother's tanks, your brother's rocket launchers, they still work, son. They're a bit tight.
Start this tank going down a hill, but you know, but it's still a tank, so be grateful. But I think when we do win, we're gonna have the fly past is gonna be stuff like Russian sanction certificates just pulled behind the plane, like when somebody says, you know, Stacey, will you marry me? It'll be that. Just hanging off the back of a plane.
The future flybys will be reference numbers for account numbers that were held in ISBN. It'd just be reminders of the glory. Yeah, we'll sort of have a tribute to not fallen soldiers, but kind of like clerical staff that did the paperwork in record time. And then we'll have a tow by of all the best Russian yachts that were seized. and the kids will be able to go and play on them.
Yeah, some of these yachts, man, I was reading about one of them is like worth, it's like $800 million. And it's got, actually, I don't think it is a Russian oligarch. I think it's the Saudi guy who died, or the Emirati guy who died not long ago. But he's got a Da Vinci painting on the yacht. So if that yacht sinks, which they do sometimes, you saw one burnt in the marina in Wales just last week. If that yacht sinks, it's taken a Da Vinci painting with it that's worth £500 million. And that's, man, that's gone. Even if it's painted in oil, you know, I don't think those paintings can survive being in the sea.
That just sounds like a really working class insurance claim, though, doesn't it? Yeah, my yacht went down, and you'll never guess what was on it. What was on it? Original Da Vinci? It's funny with the royal thing, because like you say, there was a kind of like a killjoy element, but mainly online, really, not in the real world. But there were some aspects of the royal coverage which I can sort of sometimes see where people are coming from. It's when you get celebrities on. I do think there is a problem for the royals now, is that the only people who seem to be willing to sort of be positive about the royals are all quite old. You know,
yeah,
like Lulu or Bonnie Tyler or Alan Titchmarsh. And there's this strange thing when they tell anecdotes. There's this odd voice that they affect where they say, yes, and their anecdotes are really shit, but they give them a lot of sauce, don't they? And they say, no, I happened to be at the Chelsea Flower Show and I took two steps backwards and I bumped into someone and I just thought it was a member of the public, as you would. Of course. And it was the Queen. And like everyone knows it's going to be the fucking Queen. Just get to the point. It's not that great a story. And then they give her a lot of credit for just being like a normal human being. She was very gracious about it. She said that, you know, these things happen, of course. And that just shows her character. And you go, come on. It is weird.
Are they comparing her to like other leaders around the world, like Saddam Hussein, who would have had them like flogged or like beheaded or something?
Oh, she would have liked to have done some of that, I'm sure, back in the day. I'm sure she looks back at the history books of having to, when, you know, monarchs could kill people without having to do any paperwork. You know,
So you think it was an accident in Paris then?
I think with the Queen, though, like, there's that thing where they sit around. And it's just odd, isn't it, to have, like, three or four adults just sitting around kissing arse. That is odd. That's not television. Like the troop in the colour, it all looks fantastic. The coordination of it, the guns, the flags. But when it's just four celebrities kissing one person's ass, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, because the whole thing about the royals is they're not a celebrity. They're just the sort of representative of the nation. So, you know, the troop in the colour and everything is great because we're showing, you know, look, we're militarily strong and we've got all this pageantry and all this history holding us together. And then when people get into, like, you know, the Queen, you know, saying hello to them and stuff like that, it's not as, you know. And also I think all the sort of mystique of celebrity has gone now. You know, now that you can, you know, go on OnlyFans and look up Kerry Katona's bumhole for like $3.99 a month, you know, there's no
very specific price there, Leo. That sounds like you just seen the monthly direct debits coming.
I was just running prices through my head, and I was like, what would Kerry Katona's OnlyFans price be? And I reckon it is about $3.99 a month.
Is she really on there?
She made like £1.5 million on it as well.
On it's OnlyFans? Is she,
yeah.
Well, look,
ditch the Patreon. And go to
see, this is the thing. I don't need you putting stuff out there like that. I mean, I've got a Patreon here, and this is why we are, you know, roughly 10 minutes into the podcast and you haven't heard an advert yet. So if you do want to get involved with the Patreon community, it starts upwards of £3. Obviously, VIP patrons will get their shout out guaranteed at the top of the show. And a returning patron is Dean Sanders, which just sounds like Dean Saunders, who's dropped a U out of his name to avoid being identified as a former Derby and Aston Villa ace. Do footballers still get called former aces? Is that a very 80s word?
Ace. Yeah, I don't know if ace would be like professional. People use words like professional now.
Yes, yeah, it's all got very boring. I mean, Dean Saunders, he would have been like the era of football. He wouldn't have been like Dean Saunders. He would have been like the, I'll call it, Division 4 version of Dean Saunders. Because Dean Saunders was like a real, he was seen as being a real wit of his time, wasn't he? There's a famous thing of him on the FA Cup bus going to Wembley, and he gets interviewed by John Motson, and like all the players are cracking up, but he's going through the most basic Mike Yarwood-esque repertoire of impressions, going, oh, hello, I'm Prince Charles. And they're going, oh, stop it, Dino, fucking stop it, mate. He absolutely kills me. Jimmy Tarbuck on the bus with him. All the greats. Now, what would footballers be doing on that bus? They'd be reading Mao's Little Red Book. They'd be talking to them.
Setting up foundations to stop poverty. Oh, my God.
We do need brains and
hearts. I miss the ones like Gaza. You know what I mean? Just like getting drunk on their, like they'd be recovering from an injury and they'd make sure they're drunk every day so they never recover.
With the Gaza's plastic tits, you know, he wore plastic tits on an open top bus. I mean, now like the level of oversight of these players, they wouldn't get near a pair of plastic tits.
Well, if they did wear plastic tits, it would be because they're transitioning and everybody
would. Well, it would be seen as an act of allyship.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, it's going like, that's just how I felt that day. So we will, of course, be talking later in the show about Boris surviving the vote of no confidence and all the issues around that. And we'll be having a quick chat with Leo about something he's spoken about on his YouTube channel, which was a family sex show. Yeah. Which got Arts Council funded. Of course it would. But anyway, we have our super patron, David Demain. We have, since you've last joined us, Leo, we have a new format point, Demain Talking Point. So he picks up on stuff that we're talking about from the previous week. And in keeping with just mopping up the last of the Jubilee festivities, he says that I note that you were musing which territories still have Queen Elizabeth as head of state. Other than the UK, there are 14 sovereign states that have retained their majesty. Antigua and Barbuda.
Barbuda? Oh,
that can't be. It's got to be Barbados.
That sounds like somebody trying to say two countries at the same time. Like Bermuda Barbuda. And Barbados.
Or it just sounds like a really rough pub in Glasgow. Barbuda. Some lassie got glassed outside Barbuda. Australia, Bahamas, Belize, Canada, a lot of these very early in the alphabet. Yeah. Grenada, Jamaica. I mean, Canada's interesting. It's quite a big country to still have the Queen's head of state. New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia. A lot of these, Papua New Guinea. A lot of these places are sort of, you know, in the Caribbean, as we all now had. So I grew up with it being the Caribbean, but stuff changes, Leo, you know?
Yeah.
We can't be pasty old gammers just living in our old ways of pronouncing things. I mean, I knew there was a problem when some prick in year 10 started saying it's actually Nike. Do you remember when that happened?
Right. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you get to your 20s and it's croissant.
What was it in your early life?
Croissant. Or just
croissant.
Do you want a roll?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still have issues saying pan au chocolat. I always have a moment of tiny dread before I have to ask for it. Because deep down, I know I should be having a bacon roll.
Yeah. And also, man, you've got to say it as they say it, but it means you're effectively speaking French in a French accent instead of an English accent. You've got to gauge how much French to put into that.
Yeah, I mean, all the pastries, if you want to enjoy a pastry, you have to sound like a prick in the morning. Pain au raisin. Croissant.
Yeah.
Why is breakfast so fucking French?
It's because Britain hasn't produced any good pastries. Like, look at Scotland. Hmm. Like, everything. If you eat Scottish pastries for breakfast, you'd be dead. Well, look, Scottish people are. A lot of them are dead from eating that stuff. You can't even have a Scotch egg before, like, 1 p.m.
You could, but then you'd need a siesta. Then you'd have to do something else very European.
Yeah.
That's what happened. That's how it came into Spain, was there was a Scottish sailor that just drugged the locals with Scotch eggs and all the Spanish had to go back to bed 2 hours.
there's some granny who's reading about the partisan resistance in Ukraine. So, you know, Russia's taken over like a fifth of the country, but not everybody in Ukraine and the areas that's been taken over is happy about it. And this Ukrainian granny baked these poison pies like in a sort of Hansel and Gretel fairy tale and took them down to the Russian troops and was like, here you go, boys. You look awfully tired and hungry. Here's some pies for you. And they ate these pies and 8 of them died.
I hope that she had a sort of hooked nose on her and was a real kind of, the Brothers Grimm type vibe about her?
Yeah.
A couple of boils on her nose and said, you young men would like her. I mean, we're joking about it. Men did die and they may well have been conscripts, so.
Yeah, but they knew what they were doing. They had a choice.
I don't want to hear this only following orders shit, all right?
Didn't work for the Nazis. It's not going to work now.
Okay, so as you know, Leo, we do a quick thank you and a fuck you. Have you got any sort of gratitude and bile that you want to share for this week?
Man, I've been trying to think of a thank you, and I couldn't. I've got about 20 fuck yous, but I couldn't think of a thank you. I'm gonna have to thank you to Cotswold Wildlife Park, because I went to Cotswold Wildlife
that,
Park.
That was unexpected,
and it was good. It's a great place. Because, man, you know, you go to zoos like zoos in cities, And you got a polar bear, and like, you know, even Foxtons couldn't shift that, the size of that enclosure. It's like, it's so tiny. You might as well just shove it into a lockup. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And this is a bear that like roams across pack ice for thousands of miles. And instead it's just like living in a bathtub in the sweltering heat. But Cotswold Wildlife Park, they've got loads of space. They've also got, they've got things like gerbils. And I know you can go into Pets at Home and look at gerbils for free. But they're in this sort of thing that looks like a desert, and they're all running about, you know, making nests and all the rest of it. They've got bats, they've got rhinos, they've got a little train that goes round. Mm. And what I liked about it was they don't, you know, you get on a, how much do you think it would cost to get on a train that goes round a safari park?
Well, having already paid the entrance to the safari park, I'm thinking that, well, as an additional charge, anything more than a quid would be a liberty.
Oh, right. It was 2 quid. I thought that was really reasonable.
But you're already in the park. That should be included in the price. Ryanair'd you, mate.
But they've got to pay somebody to drive this train. They've got to pay for essential upkeep and maintenance. You get to go all the way around.
Fold it into the entrance price. Just jack it up. Like national insurance. Just want to do a stealth tax.
But yeah, so Cotswold Wildlife Park. I know we don't have adverts on this, but this isn't an advert. This is a genuine review. I thought it was great. It was so much fun. And I thought the train was reasonably priced, even though Jeff thinks it was vastly overpriced.
Well, I haven't seen it. I mean, like, if it's a big proper train,
it's like one you take a kid on. But
well, look, it's the first thing is what most email in is what most people think uk@gmail.com. Who's right here? I got a hunch that the listeners are going to be with me. That's a fucking liberty. Talking of like them having like very everyday animals at the wildlife park. There's one that we went to. I went to with the missus, and they just had a fox in there, and it was impossible to tell whether or not a fox had just climbed into an enclosure where a former exotic animal had died. It was just there. It was just a fox sleeping, and it did quite a good business with the kids. I also went. Let's also do a very sort of paternal type thank you. Alton Towers. I've been aware of it. Like when I was a kid, it seemed like some distant, far off, magical land, but. Yeah. Turns out it's just near Stoke. And I went there last week with the missus and the kid. And they had this ride there called the Battle Galleons, which is it's hard to explain, but they're these tiny little pirate ships. And you go around this course and you sort of fire at people on land and in the queue with water.
Right.
It's such a laugh. And then people who are watching the ride can pay a quid. And here's another bit of upsell. But they can also fire at the people in the ship. So you basically have about, hence the name. One of the best laughs I've had as an adult with my son. Just we really felt like we were in a war, we were in the queue and we were taking heavy water, and I abandoned my post. And I can just tell that's going to be his first memory now. He's already brought it up. He's already brought it up several times, Daddy, and he keeps saying it like emasculating me in front of my wife, going, "Mummy, tell Mummy about how you abandoned your post again." I was like, "Yeah, I mean figuratively, but I'm still paying the fucking mortgage." And how about a fuck you? Have you got a fuck you want to do this week?
Yeah, the cinema manager at Cineworld in Sheffield, who there's a big mob of about 50,000 Islamists, if we're allowed to say that without getting arrested, that wanted Cineworld to stop showing this film called The Lady of the Heaven, The Lady of Heaven or something. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to, because it's some sort of like it's Shias and Sunnis, and it's like you know, one side doesn't like it. I think that, you know, the film's sort of taking the Shia side, and you know, the Sunnis don't like it or whatever. Mm. So they organise a sort of Simpson-style mob to go down to the cinema, and you know, like stuff like Satanic Verses, you know, publishers will still publish it to make a point. And the Cineworld manager just completely caved straight away. He just came out with a megaphone. He's like, yeah, whatever you want. No, we're not showing this film. We're never going to show any whatever film. What films do you like? What films do you want to see? You know,
I saw this. Yeah, so there was. I think the protest was for a couple of days, and it was. I mean, there was some quite radical polemic expressed. It seems to be a peaceful protest, but it must have felt quite threatening to the guy there, because you don't get into being a Cineworld manager to have like big religious based protests on your doorstep. And he came out and he was literally the most sort of Gordon Brittus type guy. He had a loud hailer. He's worth looking for the clip. He's like, just to let you know that I just want this to go away, is what he should have said. And the thing is it is a, you know, it is a democracy. It's a free country. They're allowed to go there and protest against these things. You just feel that if that had been a group of Christians protesting against something with a film, that he'd have just come out of the loud hail and gone, fuck off.
Yeah, yeah. And then
we'll play what we like. We'll play what we like. We're Cineworld Bradford. We play what we like. And then the moment that they were Muslim protesting, he was like, yeah, look, fair point, guys, fair point.
Because he came out, he started, you could see, he got like, as soon as they started agreeing with him, they were like, yeah, yeah, no, this is great. He got like even more like sort of into it. And he's like, yeah, it's not us, it's head office. Head office decides. Don't know why they picked this film. I hate this film. And got more into it. But
he just ends up saying, by glory be to the prophet. And then it'd be kind of incredible if it turned out like that this guy actually found God through this process. Like these guys are all patting him on the back and stuff. Yeah. And then bit by bit, he starts to find out more about Islam and he finds salvation.
Yeah.
Be a real turn of events. How did you find God? Well, it's a funny story. I was manager of Cineworld Bradford, and here I am working at a madrasa. You know, it's funny how life goes. My fuck you is for this thing that's being floated about a 4-day week. So there's a 6-month trial involving 70 companies about people working 4-day weeks, which obviously the problem is with being conservatives and being right wing is there's this stereotype that we kind of like mean this and we just like working people hard. My problem with this is that will not be for people in everyday jobs, will it? That's not going to work for people in retail, not going to work for people in plumbing, fucking people in the armed forces, is it? This is going to be, basically, this would only work for jobs where you can piss about.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And you saw through lockdown, you know, everybody had like, you know, some sort of wanky job, like working in advertising or something like that, got to work from home or got put on furlough, got 80% of their salary for doing nothing, which is the ideal situation. Man, when I had a proper job, if I could have got 80% of my salary to do nothing, just like, that's the absolute dream. But if you work at Tesco, there's none of that for you. And like, you're not even getting paid that much. You still got to go in. And this is like, you got to go in through lockdown when we think, you know, we still thought this disease was like gonna, you know, wipe everybody out. So they're like getting right down to the front line and taking it in the face, like just a little, you know, little face mask. Probably didn't even have face masks and hand sanitizers back then. So remember, it was a while before
they were the most important people. Yeah, they were the most important people in the country at that time. Like, if you ask me, who's your hero? You know, Banksy drew that photo of a kid holding up a dolly of a nurse and said like it was a superhero.
Yeah.
Mine would have been the little ginger lad at the co-op.
Yeah, totally, totally. They were the real NHS keeping us...
I was clapping for him in my mind at 8 p.m. I was a little, I think his name's Craig. He was out there restocking like a motherfucker and he was still going back and passing through people on the self-service tills. Do you know what I mean? He was alive to that. Look, let's have a Pride of Britain award for Ginger Craig. Okay, let's get into the politics after Boris has survived, inverted commas, his vote of no confidence. So just a quick recap since November, you know, and the Partygate thing started emerging, there's been talk of a vote of no confidence. And after months of speculation, it finally happened. They held it back till after the Jubilee or the Britain's Got Talent final, depending on how you view what Graham Brady's into, right? He holds it back. And so you literally on Monday morning, everyone woke up to the news that there was going to be a vote of no confidence. And, you know, people got out of the traps very quickly. And there was a spat, Leo, between Jeremy Hunt and Nadine Dorries. So Jeremy Hunt, obviously so reluctant to come out and, you know, get involved in any kind of leadership race. Poor him. He's like, look, I didn't want to do this, but here's a knife that I'd freshly sharpened that just happened to be hanging about. But we kind of always knew that Jeremy Hunt would be like that. And Nadine Dorries, who climbed into him, but in doing so sort of wrecked the record of certain aspects of Tory custodianship of the health service for the previous 12 years. You know, a lot of people pointed out that she was essentially saying the Tories had done a shit job at the time and weren't ready for the pandemic. But just a point, I mean, feel free to come back on that, but don't we all deserve, whatever you think about Nadine Dorries, don't we all deserve someone in life to have our back like she has Boris's?
Well, it's insane. I mean, like, if I was Carrie, I'd be worried about what's... Why is Nadine? She's always coming out so strong for Boris. And particularly when, you know, there can't be that much in it for her right now. Like, Boris is looking kind of like a busted flush. I know he technically won that vote, but he didn't win it convincingly. Like, 41% of his party voted against him, which is, I mean, that's getting pretty close to the tipping point. So it wasn't in any way a sort of, you know, resounding victory for Boris. So he's probably, you know, if you look at the confidence vote in previous leaders, like I think Theresa May, she got... I think she did actually slightly better, and she was out, you know, within 6 months.
So yeah, I think didn't do as well as Theresa May is not necessarily a good thing to have by your copybook. I mean, there was a point in the morning where people were sort of speculating that Boris might actually just straight up lose.
Yeah,
and you know, Jeremy Hunt was the front runner. I've said this before: Hunt versus Starmer would just look way too fucking weird as a pair. Just the simple optics of it, and people might say, well, it shouldn't be about that. We don't want a clown or a buffoon. We want steady stewardship. But the public will look at that and gone, what the fuck? How have we ended up with? I mean, they look like the same guy refracted through a hall of mirror.
Like
when you first got those computer games went on ISS Pro Evo, where you could like make one of the players really tall and skinny, and then you could squash another one down, but it's essentially still the same guy. They just look like two mates from cycling club, don't they? They look like they go to the exact same, their kids go to the same school. I don't think you could have them as a face-off.
Yeah, and I guess the argument is that, you know, we've had you know, a few years of buffoonery. Boris, you know, being a sort of, you know, charismatic, but, you know, not in any way somebody with an eye for detail, not in any way a technocrat. So they want a return to, you know, somebody who's actually focused on the job, you know, things like that, which I guess are qualities, you know, which would be good in a prime minister, somebody who actually tries. But
And tells the truth.
Yeah. Although, I mean, people say Boris doesn't tell the truth. Everybody knows that he doesn't tell the truth. It's like Trump lied a lot, but we knew he was lying, so it wasn't really lying. It was
You're right. There's something very honest about everyone knowing you're a fucking liar. Like,
yeah.
It's the surprise liars in life, isn't it, that really get you? It's like when that person that stabbed you in the back, where you go, well, I never thought of you. You go, Boris, yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Keir Starmer, you know, when it came out that he attended this party and had beer and everything, and, you know, it seemed worse because he's painted himself as this sort of morally upstanding, which is always a bad thing for a politician to do, because we know there's going to be all kinds of, you know, dirt coming out. But paints himself as this, you know, incorruptible, morally upstanding person, whereas Boris never bothered with any of that. He was just like, yeah, whatever, I'm Boris. Like, I think he is still quite popular, would be popular against Keir Starmer, whereas Jeremy Hunt, like you say, it's a very, you know, very similar. I don't even know what Jeremy Hunt's policies are. What sort of
he's much more pro lockdown. You know, that's worrying for someone like me that he's a kind of like far more, you know, big when push comes to shove. You know, there's a big state element to him. I think with the result, you're right in what you say, is that you can't really spin. It's not a good result. And I know some of the Tories were saying even a one vote victory would be enough. You're like, fuck off, Jacob. Like, that's just not true, is it? It's patently not. Even one vote. I mean, that would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be called the one vote majority, or the, you know, it'd have some sort of historical word for it. But what will be tough for him now is that when you've got, and this happened to Corbyn after his leadership challenge, that, you know, I think it was about more than a third of Labour MPs voted against him, or the membership. It was more than that, because it was Labour MPs that instigated it, whereas the membership voted for him by about two thirds. So that when he's standing there at PMQs and he says stuff and they go, here, here, you go, is it here, here? Like, do you really agree with that? And, you know, at the end when he's, you know, that question six at PMQs where he just always says, something about he'd have taken us back to lockdown. The Tories end up with more people in work, and you know, they clap and they say more. You go, you can't ask for an encore from a guy you just tried to fire. I mean, all things considered, are the Tories fucked now?
It really depends who steps up, because you never really know until they become leader, you know, who they're going to be and how charismatic they're going to be and how much they're going to grab the nation and give a party direction. So, you know, Liz Truss, for example, could step up, could become like a new sort of Thatcherite figure. She's quite sort of militaristic. She did a good job. She did a good job with getting trade deals. Post Brexit. So, you know, she's one of the Tories' success stories, I'd have thought. And also with the rise of not the rise of Russia, but you know, with the increased threat from Russia, she's got that sort of she seems imbued with patriotism and, you know, a slight sort of jingoism, which I think can be good for a country. I think the war in Ukraine could actually help save Western Europe, because Western Europe seems to have been in a death spiral for a while now, for a couple of decades. Not just with our sort of open borders immigration, which is, and this is the other thing with Boris, like you vote Tory because you think it's going to be fiscally prudent and sensible levels of immigration. We had like a million immigrants last year under Boris, in the last year we've got figures for. So I think it was last year.
A million people came to this country. I mean, that has been one of the issues, is that to do the things that keep getting popularity back with the country, right, which is going to be high spending. I mean, he's going to fucking spend money like a divorced dad, isn't he? Like every weekend, a new radio-controlled car there just to try and win a bit of approval. Those things are going to not be the things that assuage the wing of the party that just don't think he's a conservative. So he'll have to do the opposite of what they want. And meanwhile, you know, by the time you get to the next election, the red wall voters that felt he was the guy to perhaps take on like high immigration levels might think that he hasn't delivered there. So I just think that there's a very small amount of people. There's a lot of people that would never vote, that's what I think, for the Conservatives with Boris Johnson as leader now. Maybe too many for them to form a majority. But you're right, the question is who else would do it? I mean, Ben Wallace has emerged recently as, you know, gained a lot of admirers. You know, he's got a strong feel about him. Do the public really know, broadly speaking, who the fuck he is?
Yeah.
You know, did the public know who John Major was? He came in and he won the next general election. And it's often forgotten about the 92 election. He had a really good vote share. It was like 42% or something like that.
He went out. He was quite popular when he went out as well. Like, it seems in my memory, you know, when he lost to Labour, it seemed like a cataclysmic, you know, destruction of the Tories, and I guess it was in a way. But John Major was pretty popular, still had the high, you know, reasonably high approval ratings when he left.
Yeah.
Whereas Boris, like, his approval ratings are pretty much as low as they can go.
One thing I would say about power, which I find interesting, is that I've never found political power attractive in and of itself. There is something about the way that people hang on at the very end that makes you think that must be the good shit. Like that must, whatever testosterone, hormones or ego. Like, it's like, you know, people are still smoking even though it's £12 a pack. Like, I've never wanted to smoke. You go, but Jesus, there must be something good about it. I mean, why do you think they cling on so desperately?
I think it is that, like, I mean, obviously anybody who goes into politics, I mean, I'm sure some people go in because they just want to serve the nation and serve the public, but I think most people do it because they want that power and they want to they want that control, and so it's hard to let go, because there's very few politicians that will go with dignity. They're always like, you know, it's the end of a Hindu, and you know, the nightclub's trying to throw this woman out, and she's clinging on, you know, her eyelashes are stuck to her face, and that's how Thatcher goes. But and you can see in other places where, you know, they don't have this sort of democratic tradition. So in Africa, they've had to set up this fund that if you stand down if you're a country's leader and you stand down in a democratic election, you get paid like $25 million or something like that, just to encourage you to actually stand down instead of being like, nah, we're having a coup. Come on, the military are taking over. This election's declared null and void. So, people really...
I love that, like a fund for deposed dictators there. Just like a donkey sanctuary. I mean, with the power thing, like, you know, I've done a few politics programs. You'll have had it yourself where you see ministers swan into a building and stuff and they've got their SPADs, their special advisors around them. You know, like, just that is must be the narcotic high of it, is just having fucking minions.
Yeah.
It must be cool to have minions to just dispatch, and people that are worried when they've given you the wrong information, you know, you can shoot them a look when you're doing a radio thing and a stat gets challenged. You just look at, like, little Josh, 23-year-old Josh, who's just finished his, fuck you, Josh, you're going to get it. And not many people have that in life, because it's all a route, I guess. Because the reason people have Twitter is because they think it's a place where they can influence the public debate, right? That's mostly the goal of most people engaged in political discourse on there. Whereas when you're actually in politics, you do have some sort of route to that. And that is what they all struggle to give up, because they sort of think, unless you're the kind of person that could do speaking tours around the USA, right? For the rest, or you've already got a seat on the board at Shell. It's like, I suppose it's like a comic when you're working at a level, you know, once you're doing weekends at the clubs you want to be doing it at, that first hint that you might have to do open spots again. it feels like death.
Yeah.
And that is why they hang on.
Yeah. And like, you don't even need to go to the top of government to see it. Like, I worked for Greenwich Council. And I work for Haringey Council, and like the councillors, I don't think they even get paid. They don't even get paid, but they get like a little, they get like a car sometimes, and they get to go to ceremonies, and they get, you know, all this, you know, a bit of frippery. It's like being, you know, being the lead of the Rotary Club for 6 months or something. And but you can still see it goes to their heads, and the chest puffs out, and they feel all important, and like, you know, they're getting to make some decisions. I mean, all right, it's about mattresses being left in an alleyway in Walthamstow. They're still getting to make decisions.
It must be. We just haven't legislated for what it feels like to cut a cord on a new Tesco Express in a housing development. And that is, you know, at a high level what Boris Johnson's been doing. But is it a case now? I mean, I suppose another way of looking at it is that I do think that, as much as I'd be more than happy if Boris Johnson had lost and there was a new leader and I thought they should have resigned over Partygate, I do also see that the concerted nature of this has been something else. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life. Like, as you say, the level to which it's been kept in the news and the evident coordination politically and in a media sense. But is there a case of, if, you know, you shoot for the king, you better not miss? Because there does come a point where they've got no more artillery, and the only way you can then leverage him out is constant cabinet resignations. They all seem to have stood by him.
Yeah.
So is there some fucking way out of this? You know, where he spends enough money that the public sort of, you know, willing to forgive and forget a bit. Is there any route to him being able to carry on?
Yeah, I mean, Boris is sort of, he seemed to be, well, I say he seems to be Teflon, he seems to come back from any crisis, but I mean, to be honest, he hasn't been Prime Minister for that long. Like, he's not like, you know, Tony Blair.
But
I mean, he has had to deal with quite a lot. But I think, you know, I think the public, he won't be popular with the public this year. Like, we're coming up to, well, we're already kind of in it, a time of the inflation, the cost of living, like fuel prices. All of that stuff is really going to make life unpleasant, and people are going to see their living standards go down. And the economy is always the number one thing that swings people's votes. And also, from an ideological point of view, I think people vote Tory because they want lower taxes and they want, you know, a more controlled immigration policy. And that is, you know, those are the two sort of big reasons. And, you know, Boris has just been, it's been higher levels of immigration than we saw under Labour, and higher levels of tax and spend than we saw under Labour.
I think the next, he's still got the Privileges Committee, hasn't he, where they're going to also come to their own conclusions as to whether or not he intentionally misled Parliament.
Yeah.
But for now, I mean, it's just whether or not, my hunch is that it's just a long, slow death now, because I mean, the main thing that pisses me off is just, I feel like Labour are eventually going to, whether or not they're the governed by majority or as a coalition, they're just going to win by default. After all these years, they haven't done anything good. They haven't got a great leader or a great vision. They're just going to end up being that guy. You know, like the girl that just dates loads of fucking wrong-uns, and there's just some guy called Clive who hangs
just,
around.
You just got to be there in the right place at the right time.
And then right at the end, like a lazy shark, Right, after all the other sharks are fed, Clive will just whisk her off in his fucking Austin Allegro. Okay, just going to do a quick hype here. We've got some new Patreons. John Bradshaw. As you know, Leo, we always speculate on who these people are based on their names. John Bradshaw is just, he's got to be a novelist, doesn't he? But what kind of novelist? The new, it was not a crime thriller necessarily. John Brad, no, it'd be a political one where it would be really obviously satirical based on things that are currently happening.
Right.
Like,
do you think that's why he's become a patron of yours?
He's just trying to get a few gags. Yeah, John Brad, so it would be, yeah, the Prime Minister would so obviously be Boris Johnson. And everyone, all the centre-left types would think it was genius. You know, it'd be called Blevin Jameson, the blonde, mopped, blyovating, greased piglet emerged from number 10. They're going, this is just so clever. The latest political thriller from John Bradshaw. We got Siva Bala, always, you know, a bit more cautious about taking the piss out of any names that sound Siva Bala. I mean, just anything Bala in, for some reason, just sounds football-y.
Yeah.
So Siva Bala, I'm going to say, would be the kind of veteran that stayed at, like, Roma for 22 years.
Right, yeah. Played until he's 42.
Siva Bala. I mean, Siva may well be a girl's name, but hey, women's football is... Hey,
Do you have many female patrons?
I have some. I see Patreon a bit like, you know, getting you round in a pub. There are some absolute golden women that will you know, take one for the team. But, yeah, but they're few and far between, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the breakdown. I looked at my YouTube analytics and I think it's 96% male.
Leo, you skew male. I would never, ever. I mean, I think YouTube generally is 96% male, so you might even be outperforming the demographics. I mean, even on TikTok, just a reminder, I'm on TikTok, but is a lot more female, and even there, I'm like 2/3 male, you know.
Right.
It's just blokes want to spend a lot of time sitting in toilets on their phones and not talking, really. I mean, that's one of the big problems.
Yeah, maybe I'll start doing some like makeup tutorials or something.
You know what you want to do is this is a new trend I've seen on TikTok. And people take the piss out of me, but I really like TikTok. It's funny. It's an interesting, very democratic, very working class thing. And there's just people that give advice now, but they do it in this cocky, self-assured way. They go, let me tell the youngers, right, about how you treat a woman. Yeah, you just look at this guy and thought, you are a fucking bin fire. Your life has clearly been a disaster. I bet you've been in and out of prison. Do you know what I mean? Like, you never settle with a woman. You've got kids you don't see. And then here you are, 5.6 million views later, with your fucking neck tattoos. we also got Russell. And when it's a one-namer, Leo, we try and work out where would Russell work that he can't afford for people to know that he supports this sort of filth. I'm thinking it's kind of like some sort of performing arts organization, you know, like public money sloshing around.
The Arts Council, when they're
a regional version, like the Bristol Arts Council.
Has the Arts Council ever funded something that's good and worthwhile? Because they did the family sex show. They did, and any time I hear about comedians getting Arts Council funding to do something, it's always makes me realize, man, that's like, you know, you can't have an industry run by who can fill in government forms the best.
Sometimes when you do like a gig that has public money knocking about, you know really quickly is, one, you're being paid way too much for it.
Yeah.
It's really badly promoted and it's fucking overstaffed.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going, what is this sort of like Venezuelan like comedy circuit here? but thank you for all your support. So as you know, the UK tour is now finished, but the next big thing coming up is, of course, Edinburgh. I'm going to be up there from the 12th to the 28th of August with the show. A lot of people have asked me, will it be the same show as they saw on tour? Probably not. I'm going to be trying out new stuff. Obviously, the political situation has changed a lot. So if you come and see it, you'll be seeing plenty of brand new gear. Leo, any stuff that you need to push, mate? Are you up in Edinburgh this year?
No, I'm not going up to Edinburgh. I'm having a baby in September. So So yeah, I'm just doing GB News. And I do my YouTube videos. So I put a video up. I've got my own Patreon, and I put a video up every week. And I do a podcast with a criminal barrister where we talk about issues in the news and look at court cases. So like Vardy versus Rooney and Depp versus Hurd. So, you know, get a bit of a sort of legal perspective on that as well.
That sounds like good stuff. So do check out Leo's Patreon, his YouTube, of course, his social media, and you'll see him popping up on GB News. Now, you mentioned the adult sex show, or was it the family sex show.
The family sex show.
A lot of people's ears would...
I wouldn't have an issue with an adult sex show. That's what sex shows should be. But this one was for kids. This is like...
Well, hold your fire just a sec, because that is what we're going to have a brief chat about next. The family sex show, I was just looking through your videos, as you say, your excellent YouTube channel, one of them, I mean, it's about a month or so ago, but the reason I wanted to discuss this is there is this ongoing thing of, for some reason, schools seem to be getting drag artists in and stuff, and it's become, you know, I think going to Pride marches and certain kind of events, that's been going on for a while, but there does seem to be a step up in terms of trying to engage kids with things that a lot of people might see as outside of what should be the experience of their age range. And one of these things was the family sex show. Can you explain who was doing it and what the content of it was?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, there is a big move towards sort of putting children in sort of sexual environments. So like we've seen in America, there's a lot of sort of drag strippers. I saw a photo yesterday of like this kid, like 5-year-old girl tucking money into a drag stripper's underwear.
I saw that. Yeah,
it's like, what? Who on earth thought that was a good idea? And you know, taking kids to pride marches and stuff, which you know, maybe like I'm sort of opposed to that, not from the point of view of the kid, but from the point of view of the people going to the pride march. Like, if I'm out there, you know, dressed as a leather daddy or whatever, I want to be able to let my hair down and you know, be myself rather than worry about you know, kids being able to see me all my bits flapping about. But
like the day is for you. It's not for two middle class parents called Josh and Olivia to tick something off their things we need to do for our modern liberal child list. You know,
yeah, so we can it's tell about you yeah. dinner party.
Yeah, I mean, well, that is the thing. And this family sex show thing seems to have come from that world of just people in a probably an echo chamber not being challenged on what was a very shit idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And they still think it's a shit idea. So basically, this was a Arts Council funded sex show for children where for families, but they said you could bring children any age. They recommended age 5 and up, and it was based on some really shaky premises. So this is
they didn't do sex, we should be clear. They're not obviously doing sex, but
they didn't have sex, but they got naked. They get naked in the show and they talk about, you know, penises and vaginas and how it feels good to touch them and all this sort of stuff, which is, man, that's like pretty groomy and pretty dodgy. That's, you know, that's not okay. And it was all very adult themed stuff and talking about, sexuality and gender and all these things that, I mean, for a start, a 5-year-old isn't really going to understand what the hell you're on about. And so it's almost a sort of... you know, putting this stuff like it's an indoctrination into, you know, the whole pronoun culture and sexuality and things that, fair enough, when the kid gets a bit older, like when the kid, I think, leave it till the kid's 68. I think age 68 you're allowed to find out about this stuff, but just leave it till they're teens. Leave it till, you know, they start having the questions, and if people do have questions. If kids do have questions, they can ask their parents. This idea of the state should come in and train your child about sexuality, because my big opposition to it, I'm sure the people who are doing the family sex show had very noble intentions. They just want to make sure kids are informed and all the rest of it, and they just went a bit far because, as you say, they're in a lefty guardian echo chamber and nobody challenges them, and they think everybody's got noble intentions. But, man, if you're the next Jimmy Savile, obviously, you're going to get a job as a performer in the family sex show. You're going to get naked on stage, wave your dick around in front of kids, and you know, you shouldn't create a mechanism that's easy for nonces to exploit. I just think, you know, we should be aware that there are nonces out there, and you want to you know, you want to not give nonces, apart from that, you want to not give nonces excuses. Because all the nonces you see on the, I love watching those paedophile hunter videos where they, you know, go and catch somebody outside an Asda who's on his way to meet, you know, what he thinks is a 13-year-old girl, always with a carrier bag with Blue Wicked and some fruit-flavoured condoms. But, you know, on the, on those shows, the guy, the guys, because it always is guys, the guys are always like, they think that they're, you know, almost sort of doing something educational or, you know, helping this this kid find out.
Yes,
about
yeah,
it.
That is often what you hear from.
It's the same, man. It's the same mentality. It's just these people think that they're good because they've, you know, been discussing it in the Guardian comments.
And I suppose, and you know, some people that listen to this might feel like you're being incendiary, you know, in terms of, you know, making, you know, suggesting that that's a possibility. But if you look at where, you know, grooming has occurred before, it has occurred in trust positions or people that have adopted, you know, in churches, position of moral leadership, you know, scouts and cubs, you know, a different level of that. And this is kind of like a different brand of moral authority. In terms of like, you know, state involvement. So this is, you know, this was, there was government money effectively in this, but it was an opt-in. You know, parents had to choose for their kids to come and see this, right? It wasn't a...
Yeah, but I don't get to opt in to pay taxes for it.
Yeah, so indirectly it's funded, but what I mean was this wasn't like going in schools and stuff like that. It wasn't being kind of...
Yeah, this wasn't mandated. This wasn't part of the curriculum. So we've still got a few years left. I mean, like, until Starmer gets into power, then it'll become part of the curriculum, no doubt. But yeah, this was... It was quite expensive as well. So as well as their Arts Council grants... and the theatre gets grants as well. I think it was like 16 quid for an adult ticket. And it's cheaper for a child ticket. But yeah, it wasn't cheap.
I mean, like just being like, you know, trying to think libertarian, right? So parents could choose to take their parents here. They're talking about being sex positive. I mean, I was going to try and play devil's advocate there. And I had a question here, which was, isn't being sex positive a good thing? But my brain is just going, yeah, at the right point in life. Like, I just don't understand how you get to the point where you think that that is a fucking priority for anything is to deem it. I mean, sex positive, again, it puts a label on something that just exists.
Yeah.
But it's an incantation, isn't it? You know, being sex positive is good. So everyone, most fucking sane people like sex.
Yeah.
You know, but we're smutty and we're British and we like to keep it under wraps a little bit, you know, hence... Yeah, it's no fun if it's all... This is where the Europeans have been getting it wrong. They're all like, yeah, you know, it's really cool. No one has any hang-ups. You're like, hang-ups is where the good bits come from, you know? you need a sense, a certain amount of shame for sex to be fun. And it just feels at the moment, and obviously, you know, these are relatively small movements. If you look at wider British society, imagine the amount of... But the drag thing, I think, is odd. It's simply that it's a very... sort of grown-up art form.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, you know, what would we think if they suddenly started putting stand-up comedy in schools? And, of course, the answer would be, who books it? You know?
Yeah.
Because work is work. Okay, we'll just finish off here with a quick letter or two if we've got time. So a question for Leo Kirst. Has he ever been in trouble with Ofcom for something he said on Headliners on GB News? Have you ever, or have you been in trouble with the channel? Have they had words?
Yeah, I have. In fact, I got in quite a lot of trouble. I said, because there was a couple of incidents where I said felching. You're not allowed to say, you know, anything sort of sexual. It's the absolute opposite of an Arts Council funded show for 5-year-olds. You're not allowed to say rimming. I got in trouble for saying rimming, and I tried to dig myself out by saying, no, I'm talking about putting salt around the edge of a margarita glass. Didn't work. Felching.
And this is on a show that goes out at 11 o'clock.
This was on, one of them was on that show and one of them was on Free Speech Nation, which goes out earlier. But the trouble with Headliners is it's repeated at, I think, 5:30 in the morning. So then it's not a post-Watershed show. But yeah, then I made, and I actually checked. So Ofcom give you this sort of big booklet that tells you what phrases and words you can't say. So I was gonna say because you know there's the Yorkshire Ripper, Peter Sutcliffe or whatever. So he was in prison, and somebody propositioned him, and or he propositioned someone. No, somebody propositioned him, and I can't remember if he beat them up or if something happened. But anyway, this is a news story we're covering. So as well as the Yorkshire Ripper, I said we've got the Broadmoor something. I thought it was a funny little, you know, play on words, because the guy was trying to, you know, I didn't realize it was homophobic, but and also I looked in the Ofcom book and it wasn't in there, so I was like, oh, this must be all right, this must be, you know, I haven't heard it since I was like in the playground, but this must just be like,
another way of looking at that is it was so offensive that they hadn't thought that anybody would say on telly.
Basically, yeah. So I did it.
You were in a little appendices at the back, you know, creating your own list of banned words. I appreciate you coming on the show, mate. And people, if you're lucky enough to catch Leo live at the clubs, do that. Of course, there's all the online stuff, the YouTube stuff, the podcast. Get involved with that. And we will be back here with another episode next week of What Most People Think. And just finally to say thank you to my guest, Leo Kearse.
Cheers, yeah. Good speaking to you.